Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Greetings, citizens of Earth and all beings, both extraterrestrial and interdimensional. My name is Danny Roth, and this is Who Won the Week, Sci-Fi Wire's podcast dedicated to the top stories from the week in geek. I am joined this week by my co-hosts and friends, the Blurred Girl Kara Mahorn, and Sci-Fi Wire's own editor-in-chief, Adam Swiderski.
Hello.
That is all the energy I had for this podcast.
Thank you. Good night. Sweet. That's all we got.
Good night, everybody. Welcome back, everyone. We're back from Comic-Con. All of us have, I think, survived. Are any of us ghosts?
Not right now. I was a ghost a couple days ago.
Okay. Adam?
No, I am not a ghost.
Okay. I am going to save my answer for the end.
Uh-oh.
It could go either way. It could be some unexpected third option. But hey, we're going to talk about San Diego now that it's all over since last week. We had only kind of talked up until the end of Thursday. So there's a lot that we can still sort of talk about. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the aftermath of some James Gunn stuff. We're going to talk about the Buffy thing a little bit. But first, since we skipped it last week, I think... You know what? I'm not even asking your permission, Adam. We're going to do the thing where we talk about. That's right.
What's happening?
Well, we're going to talk about what we're personally geeking out this week, assuming it's anything other than sleep.
That's true. I have been geeking out about sleep.
Yeah.
Not in the dreamscape sort of way.
Bummer.
Although I did have a dream that I was trying to save Nicolas Cage from being eaten by a dinosaur. So take from that what you will. Anyway, go ahead.
Doesn't count because Dennis Quaid wasn't in it, so it ain't Dreamscape. Sorry.
That's fair.
Yeah. So what were you geeking out about, Adam?
It's not new, I guess, but I'm pretty deep now into the book Artemis by Andy Weir, which I mentioned a few weeks ago as having started, having then just finished the latest Expanse book. And now I'm about 3/4 of the way through Artemis, and it is very good.
What's it about?
A lot of fun. It's basically like a Western and a heist story on the moon. It's set in the relatively near future where there's actually a colony on the moon called Artemis, consisting of, and it's very much like got this frontier town type of vibe, because it's not, you know, governed in any normal way. It's that very Western vibe. And there's a woman who is a porter, and also kind of a savant at various things, but, you know, underachieving. And she gets involved in this big industrial conspiracy. And that's all I want to say because the plot is actually pretty propulsive and I don't want to give anything away.
Did you say repulsive?
Propulsive.
Oh, okay.
Propulsive.
I was like, wait a minute. That doesn't sound like it's very good.
Would you say that, like, the Expanse, it's good about the science? Is it realistic?
Yeah, because it's even nearer future than the Expanse, so they don't have to fudge as much. I mean, this is kind of stuff that I think is all in theory.
Is there a lake on the moon? On Mars?
There is not. That was exciting news, actually, too.
Oh, yeah. That was kind of exciting
news. And Andy Weir wrote The Martian, so this is the follow-up from the guy who wrote The Martian, which The Martian was good, but it was very... It was all about that main character. Like, you either bought into him or you didn't. The plot was just guy on Mars needs
surviving,
to get off.
Yeah.
This is a little more intricate, a little more involved, a little more of a story. And I think he does a pretty good job with it, all things considered. You know, I think it's still not the best characterizations I've ever read. One of the things I think about criticisms I had about The Martian was that all the characters except for Watney were a little thin. Mm-hmm. And you still see some of that here, but it's a little better developed. And again, I think the story is it's this picaresque type of adventure that is really a lot of fun so far. So I'm interested to see how it wraps up, which hopefully by next week I will have done that, because now I'm back to riding the subway and can read books every day. and yeah, so that's me, Artemis.
Cool.
By Andy Weir.
What about you, Karima?
I actually am geeking out about, I got to see Teen Titans Go to the Movies last night.
I heard it's like got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, that people love it.
You know what's really funny? Halfway through the movie, I thought of you, Adam. I really did. I'm like, Mr. Negative needs to come see this movie.
Why am I Mr. Negative?
No, really. It was literally the most fun I've had at a movie in a really long time. And I actually put that out on Twitter earlier, and somebody accused me of being paid to say that. And I'm like, I am not being paid to say this. Nobody from Disney is paying, or anybody's paying me, I shouldn't say Disney, Warner Brothers, is paying me to say that. The reason why it's so good is because it doesn't take itself so seriously. And yes, it is part of that new animation. And I'm saying new animation style because we've had a lot of people complain about, like, the She-Ra remake and the He-Man remake that are coming. And what it is they're actually complaining about the style of the animation, which is that Cal Art style similar to Steven Universe. And it's not the style they grew up with, because it's not for you. It's for other. It's for everybody else. Honestly,
I think that there's a certain similarity to Adventure Time and Steven Universe to a degree. But when I look at Teen Titans Go, I do. I mean, like, other than that, like, they're more kid looking.
Well, they are more kid
But I wouldn't say. And I mean, like, there's. I found out firsthand that there's some debate as to whether or not a CalArts style truly exists.
Well, yes.
But it has certainly...
It has nothing to do with the enjoyment of this movie. This movie is written so well. There's several different animation styles in the movie, and which is the other reason why I figured they could get it done so fast, because I was like, this is awfully fast for when I first heard about it to coming out. But there is literally something for everyone, including Marvel fans, and it is hilarious. There were some people that brought kids, even though it was like a press screening, they brought their kids. There were kids there. There were adults. Everybody was like literally laugh out loud, funny at a lot of these things and a lot of the scenes. It is really a fun time at the movies. And I cannot remember, I should say Black Panther was probably the last time that I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. But it's a lot of fun. And I also think that the criticism I would have is, if you're used to, like, the Teen Titans, that the last animated series that everybody, like, came to know and love, I get it. This is not that. They actually don't just look like babies. Occasionally they sound like 10-year-olds and not like 15-year-olds.
It's funny because it's the same actors, though.
It is. But in terms of some of the stuff that they react to,
yeah,
they are very smart with their demo. Parents bringing their kids to see this movie, both are going to love it. And it just is a lot of fun. And I don't want to give it away, but there is an after credit scene that if you are a fan of this entire genre, you need to stay in your butt in the seat and see. And I don't know. I'm going to be writing a review on it, but it is so much fun. And that's what I'm currently geeking out about.
I'm jealous. I do want to see it. Maybe I'll make the time.
It starts tomorrow, I think.
This weekend. I'll try. I have like a weirdly packed weekend. It's like work and then a birthday party that I'm going to. It's a whole day of D&D.
Oh, that's wow. Awesome.
I would say I'm geeking out about that, but it hasn't arrived
hasn't
yet. Maybe
yet.
I'll talk about it next week and tell you how it went. But yeah, no, I have my
what
buddy.
What are you wearing?
I was just told to wear a nerd shirt. I'll probably wear my Deep Space Nine shirt.
Wear a cape. You just need to wear a cape. Everything looks better with a cape.
Wow. All right.
Lando, John Barrowman. Everything looks better with a cape. Everyone looks better with a cape.
All right. Well, I don't know. I personally go for the Incredibles philosophy.
No
capes.
Anyway, and that's the end of that segment.
I want to know what you're geeking out about, Danny.
You do?
I really do.
I know.
Deep
but,
in my
you know,
heart and soul.
Adam's my boss, so.
So many things. When I got back home from Comic-Con, there was a package awaiting me that included a bunch of weird old movies. One of which is a real classic. It's called Vampire Hookers, and it stars.
What's it about?
It's funny you should ask. It's kind of about John Carradine and the women that he's with. So John Carradine, who has played Dracula before and is a real horror movie, he's a real Hammer horror guy, but pretty well known, is in this movie, and it's like a mid-1970s.
Is he related
romp.
To David Carradine?
I don't know. I actually don't know the answer to this question. I feel like I've been caught with my nerdy pants down, but. Just like the people in this movie. It's very funny. It's very odd. I think it's one of those films that kind of like, is, I mean, you're definitely not supposed to take it seriously. Like, I never watched it before. And like these sailors are like looking around for women and stuff. And like, they meet all these girls and they're like, these girls are hot. And then like the guy goes to go to the bathroom and like one of the women is in the men's bathroom standing up at the urinal. And I was like, oh, that's my aesthetic. And he was like really upset by it. And I was like, I don't understand what the problem is.
Oh, wait a minute. So when that scene happened in Ghost in the Shell, you were really upset. But you're willing to forgive it in Vampire Hookers.
From the 1970s where I was making fun of it. Yes.
Okay. I'm just curious. No,
because the thing was that, like, time does have an impact on me. Like, something that is coming out now wherein, like, there's a constant conversation.
Sure.
Where I expect better. This film also is like the way they're playing the joke is, it's kind of like, I mean, they do say something that's terrible, but it is the 1970s, and I do view the 1970s through a different lens. And
sure.
When I'm watching
Doctor Who versus now.
Yeah, I mean, I made an active choice because she is ostensibly very confident in that scene, and like the other guy's uncomfortable, and like I don't know.
I was just curious.
Yeah. Anyway, so I liked that, and then also I watched a little bit of Castle Rock, which I wish that Carly Lynn from Fangirls was here because I know that she's been doing a lot of research on it. But that is really great, and I really have I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about it, but it's a little slow, but I definitely think it's got a really great mood to it. And of course, Bill Skarsgård is outstanding. I think he's just such a great creepy talent. And also that Superman movie dropped, the Death of Superman.
Yeah, I wanna watch that this weekend. It's weird because
he's now dead for good and we'll never see him again.
No, yeah, but it's the end of that.
It's kind of following the comic from the 90s, and Evan Narcisse wrote a review of it, and I'm kind of like, I don't know if I want to see it now because it sounds like it's exactly like the comic. So I'm like,
I was surprised. I did end up liking it more than I thought that I would, and does anybody know if Rainn Wilson had played Lex Luthor before this? Or is it his first time?
I don't know.
Honestly. I don't know. I'd have to look that up.
But I really liked his performance. And I think
like
it's kind of cool seeing Rainn Wilson play like villains now. Because, he was great as Mudd, I thought, in Star Trek Discovery. And, yeah, I really liked him. I thought everybody was great. But it was sort of like, oh, Rainn Wilson is kind of entering the villain stage of his career, so I was like, you kind of win him a week, Rainn Wilson.
But you remember in Discovery in the beginning, you didn't really like him.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So I thought there's that moment that he could, go either way. So yeah, no, I thought he sounded great. I'm gonna like try and erase that review from my mind and go and watch it open minded. But yeah, I mean, it sounds like there seems to be so many things that dropped when we were away and so many more that are coming.
Yeah. No, I tried to catch up on a little bit of it so that I wasn't just coming at San Diego with just San Diego stuff afterwards. So it was like just 2 full weeks.
I fell asleep on so many things this week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was definitely sleeping a lot.
I fell asleep on books, comics, movies, TV shows.
Yeah. My stomach also fell out of my body. Yeah. That was great. I don't know. Like,
did you go get that? Did you
I
get
did,
that?
I did. I was like, I'm trying to put it back in. I was like, get in there. Man, yeah. Flights, long flights
are
not.
It's going to be a short podcast if he has no
healthy.
Stomach.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's kind of what's winning our respective weeks. So now, what order should we do this? Do you want to do San Diego?
Let's talk about Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Okay.
Diego.
We can talk about Comic-Con. What was your favorite thing that you did? Like, what was your, number one?
Well, the favorite thing that I actually did was host the Night Flyers panel, because that was actually a lot of fun. I feel bad because it doesn't seem to be any pictures that this actually happened. But I swear to God, I hosted this panel, and it was a lot of fun. There was a great video that George R.R. Martin sent in. And for those of you who don't know, Night Flyers is a new show coming on Sci-Fi. And it's... For those of you who have said this, and I've had to tell people, for those of you who think that Night Flyers is a remake of another horror movie that shall remain nameless.
Based on a Stephen King.
Yeah, based book, on a
that, short story.
That this story actually was written before that one was.
It is not. That is the Night Flyer. This is Night Flyers.
Yes. And also Event Horizon. And people are like, oh, it's an Event Horizon remake. It's like, no, it's not. Also a book that was written before. George R. Martin sent actually a video saying that he was sorry he couldn't be there, and that he really was excited about the show. The whole cast was there. It was a lot of fun because everybody is so excited about it, I think. And also, I have seen a lot of the show, and so the first episode anyway, and they showed scenes from it exclusively at the con, and seeing fan reactions, and I was like, see? Like, it was really, it was, you know, that was a lot of fun.
Well, that's kind of, I mean, like, I get wanting to see more evidence of it, but that's kind of in the spirit of how San Diego usually is. Like, there should be certain things that do feel like they are exclusive.
And you
were in there,
yeah.
You waited in the line. Yeah. You got to see something special. So I feel like that's kind of cool that people got to have that special experience with you.
They did. And to that end, there was one point, I think it was Saturday, I was at my hotel on my way back in, and like four trailers dropped. And I thought it was so weird. I'm like, but we're not even at the convention and we're seeing all these trailers. So I think if you do get to be in Hall H, if you do get to be in a lot of the panels, you do get to experience some things that other people won't experience. The other highlight I had was I went to a special screening, also with exclusive footage, of Alita Battle Angel. And Robert Rodriguez was there. Rosa Salazar, who plays Alita, was there. Since then, the trailer has dropped. There's a Facebook Live also with them and James Cameron. You can go back and watch. But it was that not only did they show the trailer last Friday, they also showed 18 minutes of footage from the film. And I remember hearing James Cameron say he wanted to wait to make this film until Avatar was made because, you know, the Weta engine and things like that was really going to make it look better. And I was like, nah, he was right. Like, there are scenes that are in this movie that are better. She does not look that creepy in context. It was Cameron's idea to make Alita specifically look like the character in the manga and the anime and not other humans. Because he wanted her to look like
a cyborg.
She's not a human. Right. But he wanted to make sure that she did not look human by making her physically human.
I mean,
not
that was
human.
I got that from the beginning.
And a lot of people couldn't figure it out. But
yeah,
that
no,
was
my wife still
reason.
Is mad about it. She's like, I hate this. And I was like, but this is like an Uncanny Valley, like they've gone out. Like, it's not an accident.
Right.
No.
Like, they made a choice
to
make her look
purpose.
Like this. So I am kind of into it.
Well, the reason that it's so funny because Rodriguez said very clearly, like, this was James who came up with this. I went along with it, you know. But it was literally, I think, also because, for personally, I have two thoughts on it. One, seeing the new footage, I have a feeling that they listened to fans' reaction with the teaser that dropped in December because their eyes look a little bit smaller.
Right.
They're not as big. Second, in context, it looks really, really good. Third, I really wonder, because they were very clear in this screening that they went to the creator of Alita Battle Angel in Japan. They went to him. They talked with him. They went back and forth and showed him along their whole process. Do you like what we're doing? Do you like what we're building? They invited him to the set. And I think the other reason why they made her look so non-human was so that there was no more arguments over what ethnicity she was supposed to be. That's my personal take on it. But whatever it is, they did it. I'm excited. It's going to come out in December. Ed Skrein looks amazing. Mahershala Ali looks amazing. Like, there's a lot of people in this movie. And the fight scenes are really, really incredible. Like, I saw three of them and it was like, wow. But it's not all fight scenes. They did show us one, like, dialogue driven scene to just, I guess, prove, like, there is a story here. So those are two things I was excited about. How about you guys?
I just want to point out that I called going into this con that the best trailer, biggest splash, was going to be Godzilla King of the Monsters. I believe, for the most part, that was borne out.
I agree.
Based on what I read online of people's reactions to the major trailers that were released around the con. And so I'm going to bask in my moment of glory around that, which I was super excited for that trailer to come out. I didn't get to go to the panel, but it just looks so cool. And
I saw Mothra, Ghidorah, and Rodan. Did I miss anybody else?
No, I think that's all. Godzilla.
Godzilla, besides Godzilla, yeah.
But I think those are the ones they showed.
Okay.
I don't know if any other ones
Mothra,
are going
Rodan,
to appear. But
yeah, King Ghidorah.
Because somebody said that there was a fourth, not Godzilla, fourth Kaiju, and I'm like, I didn't see this. And so I figured I would ask because I know you guys are.
Yeah, not that I was aware of, but it could have been, there could have been a hint of something there that I missed. It's entirely possible. I was.
Yeah, I mean, 11 from Stranger Things, does that count?
No, the other thing was that everybody is in this movie, like human wise. I didn't expect Charles Dance is in it. O'Shea Jackson Jr. is in it. What's her face? Obviously, Millie Bobby Brown is in it. Vera Farmiga. Thomas Middleditch showed up.
Yeah, you really brought that one out.
Yeah.
I can't forget about that Middleditch.
Zhang Ji was in it, who I haven't seen in a while. So, like, I was just like, whoa, look at all these familiar faces. And Kyle Chandler, of course, I think is one of the main male protagonists. So, I was really blown away by that. I mean, of all the trailers that came out, that was the one, only one that had me going, like, woo-hoo-hoo! You know, like, had that total, like, geeky fan-out moment.
You didn't geek out over Doctor Who?
I did, but the trailer wasn't a lot there.
You know what was missing from that trailer? The TARDIS.
You know, here's what I'll say about this, though.
And listen, it's an amazing moment. I was so glad to see her and hear her in action. And
I thought the teaser had more than the trailer.
And she did great. I mean, like the other big moment that I wasn't there for, but saw on social media was her showing up for the Her Universe fashion show.
Oh yeah, very cool.
I thought that was a really cool little beat there. That's the type of thing that you know. I feel like this year was a little lacking in those big, like, moments. Oh my God, Comic-Con moments. Like when J.J. Abrams, the year before The Force Awakens came out, took everybody across the street to a orchestral performance of the Star Wars score. And like everybody who was in the Star Wars panel at the time got to go. And like, those are those moments you read about and you're like, man, I really wish I could have been at Comic-Con for that kind of thing. And
she got your memo, though. Her pants were incredibly long.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. That's an improvement. But yeah, so this year felt like it was lacking in those a little bit. And I think that was one of them. I think Jodie Whittaker did a really good first Comic-Con.
Yeah, I mean, like, and honestly, for me, the deal with the trailer is I think that they've just decided that they want people to go in as blind as they can. They don't. They want people to really be surprised by what the season's going to be about. Yeah. And so I think that's nice if that is indeed what the deal is. I think it is, though. My suspicion is that Chris Chibnall doesn't want anybody to know what the story's going to be, what the relationships are going to be like. I think he wants everybody to find out in the moment at the same time. And I think that's great. I'm into that.
But there were some hints of going back, of hearkening back. I think the teaser did this with like the fish sticks and custard and
sure,
things
but
like
I mean,
that.
Again,
like, okay,
like,
we are acknowledging the
that those previous things exist. Sure, but yeah, I mean, I think that it's very purposeful that they're showing as little as they can, and we're pretty close now. So it's kind of I hope they don't show much more. Honestly, yeah. I would like to kind of just like go in completely fresh on this one. That would be really
nice.
Refreshing.
Yeah.
Yes,
but yeah, I thought it was great, and I saw the clip of the panel because. There had been something on the Graham Norton show where David Tennant told the story about how Chris had called him up on the phone and said, like, oh, like, I'm going to have the new doctor call you because they're a little bit nervous. And David was, like so shocked when he saw her name because he's like, we were friends. So it's not like a number came up. Her name came up, you know. And then to hear Jodie do it, she was like, you know, so, like, I called him up and he was like, what? And she did this really good David Tennant impression. I was like, that's fantastic. And yeah, apparently she talked to Matt and to Peter. And so, like, that was really, I don't know, that made me feel good. That was like a nice thing that I discovered from San Diego. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about?
I mean, in terms of things I did individually, I didn't get to do a lot of interviews because I was doing a lot of administrative work. But I did get to talk to some of the cast and people behind Batman the Animated Series.
Mm-hmm. Never heard of it.
Yes, which is celebrating a 25-year anniversary. They're putting out a big Blu-ray set. It's also going to be available on the DC Universe streaming service. And man, that was one of those interviews where I had 10 minutes to talk to them and I could have used about 45 because there was so much to cover. They had so many interesting things to say. And it's just, you know, there are very few things that are in our space that are universally beloved, especially in the modern era. And I think that Batman, the animated series, is something that most people who like Batman can agree on being like a really great representation of Batman.
Yeah.
And again, that's very rare. You know, that you don't have at least a faction that's like, oh, I don't like it. So it's a stone classic. It defined Batman for a generation of people in a lot of ways. And just to get the chance to talk to those people and even the few minutes that I did and hear their thoughts on, you know, I asked them about how they felt about the argument that's going on over tone in superhero movies and TV shows these days. And you know, they had some really interesting things to say about Mark Hamill and how intense he was behind the scenes working as the Joker. And so, yeah, it was just, it was great. And it's, you know, I really could have spent an hour talking to them and hearing all their stories, but it was a really fun interview to do.
Yeah, I got to do something like that. I got to interview the cast of Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And it was one of those things, like, I could have talked to them forever. Kat Graham is now going to play April O'Neil, which is really awesome. And she's so excited about it herself. The team has been switched around a little bit. The artwork looks a little bit like Samurai Jack because it's the same creative director that's on it. But I think the highlight for me came after the interview ended. And I'm seeing this guy, like, I'm like, I know who this is. But until he opened his mouth, Rob Paulsen is actually directing the new season. For those of you who don't know, Rob Paulsen was the original voice of Donatello. But he's
Rob Paulsen was the original voice of Raphael.
And then the last
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles series, he was Donatello.
He was Donatello. You're right. Thank you. No, you were correct. I was wrong. I'm thinking of the last one instead of the first one. Yeah. No, you're right, though. So, but what did it for me was, when I said, like, look, I'm a huge fan of your work, and I didn't have my mic out. I just had my phone out. So if you're following me on social media, you saw this. He talked to me for like 5 minutes as Yakko. And it was probably the most, I regressed into a 12-year-old for the rest of that interview. I was so excited because Yakko, like, Animaniacs is one of my most favorite, you know, things ever. So that, and then the other thing I thought was amazing was the Eisner Awards. Like, this year, it was so diverse, the winners. And, of course, one of my favorites, Monster from Image, written by Marjorie Liu and drawn by Sanaa Takeda, which was really funny. When she accepted the award, she called Sanaa in Japan, and she was, like, cooking dinner. And it was like, she's on speakerphone, like, really? Are we really doing this? So that was amazing. They won 5 awards. World of Wakanda. We had Aletha Martinez on our show. That book won a lot of, like, amazing books, even smaller ones. Elements Fire by Tanika Stotts. Like, a lot of women and diverse creators won, and I was like, hey, yay! 1 year that we don't have, you know, that actually, you know, it feels like a lot of indie stuff won. Not that the majors shouldn't win, but it's nice when some indie artists, you know, really get acknowledgement. So I want Vita to win next year.
Me too.
The musical?
No.
Vita Ayala.
They can win at literally every award as far as I'm concerned.
Well, the comic that they have out right now is The Wilds. And
Submerged. They're both really good, I have to say. Both of those, and there's a lot more. Anyway, that's a whole other.
So anyway, that's who I would like to win for next year. But I was just excited about all the, it's like, many times when the Eisners come out, you're like, okay, all right, all right, that makes sense. But this year I was like, yes! Like, I was, like, really excited. So that was the other thing.
Cool. And that's the end of that segment.
No, Danny, we want to know how your Comic-Con was, obviously.
It was great. What did I do? Lots of things. I feel like with the interviews that we do, there's always an opportunity to meet people that you really are genuinely a huge fan of and be able to say to them, if you have a good interaction, that you really appreciate the work that they do. So I had a chance to do that in 2 different situations. One, I was in the press line for Glass, and I was talking to a couple of the different actors, and I almost didn't get a chance to talk to Knight because they were really wrapping the whole thing up, because Jamie Lee Curtis was going to come through to do Halloween. And they said, you can have one question with him. And I said, first of all, I think that Mr. Glass is one of the most fascinating and well-developed characters ever, period. Like, it was one of my favorite, like, villains. I almost struggle to call him a villain because I think he's so interesting. And that was the one thing we talked about. I said, I just want to know how you decided to come at this character again after so many years, and also to thank you for working with Sam Jackson on, again, like, I just absolutely one of my favorite characters in of a superhero style. And mm-hmm. I just thing ever, like, that opening scene that doesn't even have Sam Jackson in it, that's all ostensibly about the struggle that character is going to have both in a literal and a sort of metaphysical way. It's just one of my favorite openings of any movie ever. So it was so exciting to finally get a chance to meet Knight and to try to sort of impart that to him. And then likewise, even though I was kind of goofy with Divya Mazouz, who plays young Bruce Wayne on Gotham, and I got him to respond to the Titans Gotham,
the
Titans Robin, which was great, and it got traded around. I'm glad. If you haven't seen it, if you go on to Sci-Fi's Twitter, you'll see that he responds to it, and he is very funny, and I think very he's very smart in the way that he answers. I think it was good for both shows that he answered it the way that he did. But I actually, like, as he was about to leave, I said, I don't know what casting director found you, but they deserve like all of the awards, because I can think of nothing harder to cast than a young Bruce Wayne. I think that's one of the most difficult things. And just because you have been so amazing at it, I think people suddenly like took it for granted and didn't like have, I think, forgotten how hard it was to find somebody. And then for that person to grow into that role and to constantly outdo and I think sometimes, frankly, outperform these fully grown-ass actors that are on Gotham. And he really shines every scene. And I was like, man, you are legitimately one of the best actors on television. Every single scene you're in, I'm always so impressed. And, like, it's nice because I didn't feel like I was, like, kissing his ass because I was trying to get, like, some Gotham contacts. I was doing it because, he's really phenomenal.
But that interview was good, Danny. I saw that. Was good.
I'm just blown away by him. And so it was just exciting. It was, you know. I think that is my favorite thing about going to cons. And this con really had a couple of people that I was, you know, like almost caught up in my throat a little bit, like nervous and excited to talk with. And that doesn't happen, I think, at every one that we go to. I mean, there's like always, like I enjoy talking to people. I mean, I'll talk to anybody ever, but, but yeah, I mean, that was really phenomenal. And, where we were for that space, for that particular little filming studio that we had, there were a lot of other people who were also filming around us. So I would just hang out there. And so, like, I wasn't interviewing Jodie Whittaker, but I 100% saw her just walking down. She walked right past me.
Yeah, there was a lot of people. I saw the cast of I saw several casts.
Yeah, the cast of The Flash, so the cast of Legends of Tomorrow.
I spoke to the cast of – oh, I can't believe I forgot this. I spoke to the cast of Iron Fist – and talked to Alice Eve, because one of the announcements was that Alice Eve is playing Typhoid Mary. And I'm not going to tell you guys the reaction. I'm going to make you guys.
But it's worth a look.
You guys need to either go to my Twitter or Instagram or go over to the Sci-Fi Wire YouTube page, because she had she was basically discussing how fluid Typhoid Mary's sexuality seems to be.
Yikes. And it was good. It's pretty funny.
It was a very interesting.
I was not expecting it.
Me
I was
either.
Like,
did
was
you
like,
see my reaction?
Yes, I
wasn't expecting it either.
It was good, though.
So, yeah, there were some really great highlights and too much to probably even run down. But it Comic-Con, we do a lot of cons. But this con is definitely the one where you get to see the most, and I think experience the most, even out on the street, even with the fans and the cosplays. I think some of the best mashup cosplays we see here. I saw a half of Wakanda at one point. I don't know. I
have to shout out my favorite cosplay thing, and this wasn't even something I saw in person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys saw this, but someone recreated, you know, that stock photo meme that goes,
yes,
that's going around about
Star
the guy,
yeah,
who's with the one girl,
yeah,
and looking at the
back,
other girl.
Yes.
Someone recreated that with Han Solo, Kira, and Princess Leia.
And it's epic.
And I was like, that wins all.
It did win all the things.
Cosplay for me for all time.
The other one that did it for me was the guy that dressed up as remember the priest from Black Panther, played by, you know, Forrest,
yes,
Whitaker? They dressed up as a Pink Panther priest.
I saw that, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was amazing.
It was epic. And they had, like, the panther head as the crown. It was awesome. But, yeah, there was there's so much that happens there. Even when we recorded some of the news hits, seeing the bus go by, the karaoke bus, and how everybody into it. The human, I was a little scared of the human claw machine, but everybody seemed to be into that, too. But I was not getting in there.
No, it was cool. I was like, we got Katie Wilson. Katie Wilson could do that.
I wasn't doing
Whitney,
it.
Whitney Moore, get on that. Gerard, he can get on that.
Like, and Gerard was new. Like, yeah. Welcome,
yeah.
Gerard.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. If you're listening, I stopped him on Saturday at the party because he was just kind of walking around like he didn't know anybody. And I was like, come hang out with us, man. Like, I was like, I'm surprised that no one had already done this, but like, come meet like the people that are here. Like, this is a little inside baseball. But yeah, it was like, that was the first, this is the first con that we had him. And I was watching the content as it came through. And he also did kind of like an activation thing with the Ninja Turtles, and the voice actors were there for him too. And like, it was a really great piece, and he's a really talented guy. So it was exciting. It's nice to have him as part of the team. And that's the other thing that happens. I feel like that's, I mean, like, not to, again, like, go so inside baseball, but like, I went to like the Nerds of Color party, and I went to like a couple different places, and it's really like, you get a chance to like, just sit down and talk to other people that are in your industry.
Yeah, I went to Women in Comics dinner, and it was like that. You got to just meet and talk to some other people. And then ended up, I think it was Saturday night, ended up at the Hyatt with everybody else in the lobby. And that was just like a who's who of comic book creators and some actors mixed in and stuff. It was really kind of funny. It's like all the animators were there.
Yeah. All right. So now we have gushed about that, and now we're going to talk about two things that are one, I would say to some people it's exciting, and then for others it's more like a complicated feelings. And the other thing, which is sort of a long, laborious, complex conversation that we're going to boil down to a couple of minutes because we're so smart. So the one thing that came out of Comic-Con that was really enormous is, you know, so Joss Whedon was there. He was talking about the new series that he was going to be doing. He was talking about, they did like a Dr. Horrible reunion. And then it was announced that they're going to bring Buffy back. Buffy's coming back. He will be involved to some degree. And the only other huge thing that came out of it, I guess, is that they were like, oh, she's going to be black. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. Now, if you listen to the Fandom Files and if you follow me on Twitter, I have talked about this a lot. So I would like to throw it to the two of you for your thoughts, because I already kind of went off on this in multiple avenues. Karama?
I think I feel better about it now that I know that Monica Osu-Wu-Breen is going to be the showrunner. I'm sorry.
No, it's
Monica.
Okay.
Sorry, Monica. I feel better that now that I know that she's involved, because at first it was like, it's Buffy and it's going to be a black woman. Great. Like, no story or anything like that. And I get a little nervous when I hear that, because it's sort of like, is it baiting? Like, everybody else would go, hey, it's going to be a new Buffy and it's here or there. Like, we'd have figured it out when it started that she's black. So I just kind of felt a little annoyed that was what they led with, as opposed to, this is what we're doing. Is it a reboot? Is it a rehash? But now that I know that it's not sort of a Comic-Con sort of publicity stunt, and that they're actually putting some thought behind this, and that they're getting some good, you know, writers and stuff. Again, I want to make sure that writer's room is just as diverse, so that stupid stuff doesn't come out of this actress's mouth, because poor thing is going to be like scrutinized within an inch of her life. Poor thing. All that aside, I am excited to see it come back. Also, this is going to sound a little trite, but the fact that he's so busy that he can't do all of it, he's just kind of putting his stamp of approval on it and then kind of stepping back, makes me feel better. Because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. didn't really get really good until he kind of got out of the way.
And I think a lot of the conversation around it at the beginning was, is this a reboot? Is this a remake? Is it a new Slayer in the same mythology? You know, that type of thing. And because the reactions that I saw were varied based on that. If people thought it was going to be, oh, it's just a new Slayer, but it's set in the same universe, but it's, you know, and it'll reference Buffy and Xander and all these people, but it's not, we're not going to have a character named Buffy who's the main character. That's okay. I think people were kind of more on board for that than the idea of a remake. Mm-hmm. And actually, Monica Owusu-Breen put out a statement today on Twitter basically confirming that, I think, where she was like, listen, Buffy the Vampire Slayer was my Star Wars. I was a fan before I was a writer. And she says there's only one Buffy, one Xander, one Willow, Giles, Cordelia. She goes through the whole list. And she says they can't be replaced. But here we are 20 years later, and the world seems a lot scarier. So maybe it could be time to meet a new Slayer. and that's all I can say. So that's what she said on Twitter. That honestly gave me a little bit of the feels, because yeah. I think that, you know, it is a scary world right now for many, many reasons. And we need compassionate heroes, which hopefully, you know, a Slayer would be. And yeah, so I'm intrigued and I'm into it. And I do like the fact that the lead is going to be a woman of color. I think that's important. I know that's not quite as... Danny, you had your own vision of what you wanted that to be, and I know it doesn't sure.
Well, I mean, but I mean, saying that she's a black woman doesn't say anything else. That just says black and a woman. That doesn't necessarily... I mean, I'm not, like, holding my breath, but I don't know.
That's true.
I don't know
if
she will be cis or trans.
You make a good point.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I could not speak to that.
I wonder if they would have come out and said that. I don't know. But anyway,
well, so, I mean, unless they've already cast her, which, yeah. I mean, I don't know.
I don't get the feeling from everything that I've researched that they've cast her
Oh,
yet.
Absolutely not. No, I think it's still early days. But I just think, I mean, I know, you know, there's the whole element of, you know, is it a, like you said, baiting move? And I think... You know, is announcing that, was it to stir up some interest? Maybe, but the fact that the decision was made that way, I think, is good and important. And
I mean, Chris Chibnall had said right from the jump that the next Doctor was going to be a woman, that had always been his plan. So, yeah.
But here's also, again, and I just go back to the writing, there is already a Buffy comic out right now for Giles that is in circulation, and Giles goes back in time and he's in high school and it's a bunch of different things. But he and Erica Alexander is writing that, co-writing that, I should say. So there's a African American character with Giles that's like his partner in this. So there, and as everybody has said who is a Buffy fan, there have been black female slayers. There's an African one, yes. A Jamaican one. This isn't new.
No.
So I think that's why I did not want to comment on her race as much as I want to comment on what is it? Is it, like you said, now we know it's not a, you know, is it a reboot? Is it a rehashing? Are we recasting everybody? They're not doing that. It's a new story within the same universe. So in my world, it's sort of like one of the 357 angels they keep bringing into Supernatural. Like, yeah. So we now have like another character that, and they're clearly, they never said there was only one Slayer. So this is clearly going to be,
the series ended, yeah. There were multiple Slayers.
Multiple Slayers.
Because...
I mean,
Buffy threw those doors open at the end. So
yeah, and she died a couple times. Other Slayers came in.
Well, that's a lot of those are a lot of questions. How much will the comics count? Because they are supposed to be official continuations, and I don't know what will happen if this is a continuation. If they will acknowledge comics and acknowledge future characters like Malaka Frey and that sort of stuff. I still have the same concerns that I did before I heard that she was going to be new. I think that when you look, television as a medium has changed. I acknowledge this. But if you look at something like, let's say, for example, Black Lightning. Okay. This was a franchise that nobody really knew about. And they made a point of having it not be a part of the Arrowverse, which I think was mutually beneficial for everybody. Because it meant if it was going to succeed, it was going to succeed on its own terms. And it was also going to be able to be what it actually is and not treat blackness as a monolith. And also be able to really genuinely have queer characters and be able to do as much as they really wanted to do without too much of people going like, can you dial it back? Can you dial it back? Because if it failed, it's not even part of the Arrowverse, so it doesn't hurt anything. Like, so it was either going to succeed or fail on its own terms, because it was, I mean, based on another character, but not as big a thing. Buffy is enormous. Mm-hmm. And my concern is there, because it's so big, because the expectation is that it has to be a success, that it has to be a thing that's going to last for a while. Are they going to do like they did with Brian Fuller with Star Trek, or at least as my perception is that, like, you know, like, are they going to say, okay, she's black, let that be enough? And are they then, like, is it going to be, like, the same thing where it's, like, and when we say black, we mean light-skinned black, and, like, and that, and, like, and we don't really talk about the culture of that, it's just that she is, and we just write her the same as we would our white default characters. Like, this is my larger concern, is that I don't know
and that's why I go back to the writers. There's got to be somebody in the writers' room that is sensitive to those things.
It would be a huge easily avoidable blunder if they did not do that. I would be stunned.
That would be, and like it would be one of those things. Thing
I mean, which is I guess I could see it happening because it certainly has happened before.
Where, I just have a great anxiety. It's because Buffy is so big that I just, you know, it's just a fear of mine that that people will say, okay, so like we did the one thing. Isn't that enough? Like, can't, like the rest of but we have to otherwise appeal to, we have to cast the widest net possible, which is always, you know, like the, our understanding of like a white straight cis default. This is a thing that when it comes to really big established properties, I think that that tends to happen. Now, maybe Star Wars will help with that, but Star Wars has been dealing with this huge backlash, and like, this is sort of where the question is raised. And yes, Joss Whedon's involvement at all gives me personal, yes, uncomfortable feelings, but that, you know, I think is, that's a personal thing. This stuff is like, you know, like there are black women who have written a series about vampire huntresses. I think Ellie Banks did one too. Mm-hmm. And so like, yeah, like if you did like a book like Minion and you like adapted that, but this is the thing, right? Like when I was at the Nerds of Color party, who was I talking to? Shit.
Keith?
No. It was Valerie Complex. Oh. And Valerie was like, this is a cash grab. You know what I mean? And we talked about it for a while. And that's like, yes, they chose Buffy because it's going to be something that's like pretty much a guaranteed hit. But even then, it's just...
Well, let me ask this question. And I'm genuinely interested in your opinion. It's not a challenge. So Buffy, when Buffy came out, it was a big deal. She's a woman. We're going to be talking, you know, like, the issue that she was a woman in a traditionally male role, right? Not in the mythology of the show, but in, what do you call it, the tropes of genre, right? This is, mm-hmm. typically would be a guy. Do you feel that they stopped there or went, because the show did address a lot of social issues.
It did
over
in
the course
in
of
its way,
run.
But it's, you know, all right. What I would say is, putting Buffy aside as a character for a second, I'll give you a different character as an example.
Mm-hmm.
Willow Rosenberg is Jewish in name only. Like, they mention that she's Jewish once or twice, and then it's like, it does, it's like, but then they write her exactly the same. They don't really bring it up at all. Like, it's there, but then it's not, because eventually they get to the part where she's gay, and that's really like the driving force. And it's like, well, I mean, you know, Jewishness is a pretty relevant thing, especially if you're living in a largely goyish suburban neighborhood. I gotta be honest, like, having grown up in that situation, it does impact you. And so I do have concerns about where it's just one thing. So yeah, like, Buffy traditionally was in a male role, but otherwise she was a pretty little blonde girl who had a lot of feelings, you know what I mean? Like, and that's not necessarily bad, but like, yes, it's just, they basically gave her the one thing that was a little different. Like, Willow eventually got the one thing that was different, and then ignored this other thing that they introduced with her, and, you know, and the way that they treated Kendra was pretty bad, and like, so yeah, I have concerns based on the history of the property, and then based on the size of it, and knowing the way that the Hollywood machine has a tendency to operate. I'm not saying that it's guaranteed to be bad. I'm saying that for me to just come out the gate excited, nah. I can't, well, that I can't do.
I think I'm coming out of the gate. I'm the same way. I'm not coming out of the gate excited. I am intrigued, like I said, especially now that I know that Monica's involved, because people think she's come out of nowhere. She's produced She's produced Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. She's produced Lost. She's produced
Alias.
I'm trying to see what else. She's been in the game a minute. It's not like, hey, we're just going to throw this all at the wall and see what sticks. I don't think Joss Whedon would do that with his, you know, with this. And I also think that, again, this has been one of those years of people constantly jumping at things before they come out. I'll give the Shazam trailer that example. Like, we were all like, what is this? And now that we've seen the trailer, a lot of us are like, oh.
Yeah.
I think we should give it a chance and let's see who's writing it. Like I said, it all has to do with the writing. And also, that was 2002 when Buffy first came out.
That was like towards the end. But yeah. Buffy ended, I think, in 2002.
I'm sorry, yeah, ended around 2002.
Sure.
So I think that a lot, it started in like the 90s.
It did.
So things are a lot different than they were mm-hmm. in the 90s. So I would hope that somebody's not going to write the character the exact same way and not, you know, the actual words.
You made a really good point, I think, which is the difference between being excited and intrigued.
Yeah.
I think the announcement that something is happening with only the one piece of information that we know about it, which is the ethnicity of, not the ethnicity, but the skin color of the main character, it shouldn't be enough to get anyone excited, because that to me speaks of expectations that we don't know anything about how they're going to be met or borne out. I think I would advise anyone to approach news like this with that level of, okay, this is interesting and I am interested in this and I want to see where it goes, but there is so little to go on now that to make any sort of judgment at this point, I think is way premature. Like having concerns, et cetera.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, like, look, here's what I will acknowledge. When when that news came out, I sat down and I chewed it over for a long time. And then I dusted off my login to a website that was like a little fan page that I had with two other people that, I haven't used in a really long time. And I sat down and I wrote something there for free because I wanted, without any kind of editorial oversight, to really just express it. And the reason that I would do something like that is because Buffy the Vampire Slayer is incredibly important to me. And so my anxiety is born from a lot of things. And one of those things is that. And I know that. And when I talk about it to the degree that I do, it's not just because I distrust Hollywood, although I certainly distrust Hollywood. It is also that I know that there are so many other people like me who feel like that they survived times in their lives because of that show and the friends they made through it. And so, that is a big part of where that's coming from.
It's not so much that the casting, it's the fact that they're rebooting this show at all, that it's really close to you.
Sure, and I'm aware of that. Maybe I should always be like as cautious as I am with this. I don't know. But I know that part of the reason why I am as cautious is because I'm aware of how important it was to me. And I remember having this little website that ended up getting as much attention that it did, that it sparked the ability for me to have this professional career doing essentially what I was doing there. It's important to a lot of people, and I just want to make sure that the legacy of the show is treated with care,
okay.
And that when we say like we're going to cast a black woman, that we're not going to treat black as monolith. Like these are really the things that are on my mind.
When Nicole Maines was announced as the first transgender actress to be cast on Supergirl over the weekend, it's the same thing. It's like, great, okay, well let's see what they write, because
let's wait and see.
I don't
what
remember
that means.
Dreamer being an amazing character, so okay. But let's see how it's written. Let's see. I'm intrigued, but I'm not like, you know.
And the other thing, too, is like I hear the thing about like doing it as a publicity thing. But on the other hand, I think it's also important to put, I mean, and again, I'm speaking as the old straight cis white male. So what the frig do I know about this lived experience? But I think from a larger cultural sense, it's important to trumpet these things because of where we are. If we were in a different place and it was just like, oh, no, we've just hired an actress. You know, and it wasn't, you know, trans actresses weren't getting hired for things on the daily, or were getting hired for things on the daily, then I'd be like, okay, if you're going to trumpet it, whatever. But like, it's important, I feel like, to put those things out there to show that these barriers are ever so slowly being chipped away at, even if they're not where we want them to be.
And you're right, we have to celebrate them, because we can't keep complaining like, hey, we need more of this. And then when we're given new of whatever we're asking for, it's like, well, I don't trust it. So we kind of need to give it a chance.
I understand wanting to do well by it and saying, being, I hope they do well by this. I'm concerned, that type of thing. But like, again, I'm glad that they would put that out there, because I think that it says something, and it says something to people who we really need to come around on these ideas that, you know, these barriers that are there need to come down. So,
and to put money behind it means that somebody in a high ranking position is like, let's actually start giving fans some of what they're asking for.
And I mean, does it mean the problems are solved? Oh God, of course not. Of course not. Not even close. But it's just like it's just a little chink in the wall.
Armor,
you know, that hopefully enough of those, and eventually the whole thing falls down.
I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
In the meantime, there is this ongoing James Gunn story, which is James Gunn got fired from Guardians of the Galaxy 3. after ostensibly he had written the script and things were about to gear up and he was going to be at San Diego Comic-Con. Then all of a sudden people were getting emails about him canceling. And then lo and behold, Mike Cernovich, a alt-right blogger and tweeterer, went and found some things that James Gunn had said in the past, which he had apologized for in the past, and decided that he would leave up to show the way that he had evolved as a human being. And Disney was like, nope, you gone. And in between that announcement and now, there have been rumblings from the cast that they're going to make statements about what has happened, but a lot of them seem very defensive of James and talking about how much they love him. And there's also been petitions to try and get Marvel to change their mind on this. And meanwhile, Rian Johnson, who is the director of Star Wars The Last Jedi and is ostensibly going to be doing a lot more Star Wars in the future, went and deleted 20,000 tweets. And was pretty honest about the fact that he was covering his bases.
Like a preemptive strike.
And Bobcat Goldthwait came out and made a statement being like, hey, Disney, you should probably take my voice out of this particular ride because I also made some really bad tweets.
And check out James Woods.
And also, yeah, why don't you check out James Wood? His tweets are pretty wild. Maybe you shouldn't have him involved either. What do you think about that? Anyway, bye. So now here we are living in a time wherein your tweets, whether or not you wrote them 10 years ago or now, exist with a variable and unknown amount of weight this very second always.
Yeah.
Okay, but let's also clarify the fact that he had made some of those tweets were pretty bad.
Yes, like, they were very bad.
He said some pretty horrible things, like kind of joking around about, I don't want to say child molestation, but something to that extent.
Pedophilia and things like that.
We are not condoning what his tweets are.
But
let me say this, and this is kind of the statement I've been making about this. Like, many of us who are in a position of privilege, white, male, straight, etc., go through this period where we feel like we can make racist, homophobic, misogynist jokes, whatever, because obviously we don't believe that. We're not that person, and everybody knows that. So we can make these jokes, and we're being crazy and extreme, but haha, we don't really believe it, so it doesn't mean anything. And eventually, you mature, and you learn that while that may be true, you are in fact contributing to a larger conversation that And in a harmful
way.
But
I think, I will acknowledge this as somebody that also has had to grow out of that.
Yeah.
The unfortunate reality is, like, for example, ironic racism is still racism.
Absolutely. I 100%
agree
with
you. And that's the thing that, like, yeah, we have to, like, sort of, like, and I feel like there's no point in which you stop that learning process.
Right.
You have to spend the rest of your existence until you're in the grave thinking about that.
But I think I agree with you, it's a lifelong process, but I also think that there is a moment where it clicks. Like, for me, there was one for me anyway, because I certainly went through that too, where between my friends, I would like, oh, I could make this joke about this Asian person, and obviously I'm not racist, so it's not real, right? And then, you know, you just reach this moment of thinking about what it means and how it contributes to the larger thing. And most of us, I think, and I can only speak for myself, didn't go through that in public in a record that is public for the rest of your life, as long as you leave it up there. And that's a very fortunate thing for us. And obviously, like, I look back at that time when I used to do that, and I think that was the stupidest thing, and I wish I had never done it. You know, you can't take it back, but you grow and develop as a person. James Gunn did it on Twitter where everybody could see it forever. And I think that's the reality of the world we live in now with social media, and a lot more people are going to have that experience of the person who they used to be being a matter of public record and reckoning with what that means. So on a certain level, I feel some sympathy with him because I went through a similar, I don't think anything I ever said was as extreme as some of the stuff that he said, but I went through a similar process of realizing that making these jokes, while I considered it harmless, was not, and contributed negatively to the discourse, and getting away from that. And I understand where he was coming from with that. And I think that, you know, a lot of the pushback on this also is because of where this came from, because none of these people who went after James Gunn were doing it because they thought he was a real pedophile who was really harming children. This was a politically targeted attack.
Yeah, no, that's
and
that's
everybody
what
knows
was,
it. So that, it's like it.
That's the part that makes me laugh about this whole thing, because a lot of the tweets that were brought out were like, you know, sort of pedophilia kind of things and racist and misogynistic, and none of the parties involved care about women or black women or children.
Yeah.
They really don't.
Yeah, and I mean, like,
it was literally just, oh, we'll get you. We'll use the quote-unquote SJW weapon against you because we don't agree with you, and we'll bring you down.
It is exceptionally frustrating that, that the person in question, not to give him power, but Mike Cernovich is a Pizzagater. He is the guy that instigated that. He was a big voice to that. People suffered and died because of things that he said. He constantly goes on Twitter and makes random accusations of pedophilia of other people. And by the way,
has also tweeted that he doesn't think rape exists.
Yeah, like this is not.
He doesn't think rape exists, and he doesn't think rape culture is real.
This is a frustrating thing, right? Because at least in the past, when I would disagree with people, let's say, like I grew up in a time where, like, you know, the right and the religious right were one and the same. From Ronald Reagan forward, that's pretty much how it operated. And like when I would disagree with people from that position, at least they would, you know, they would have like, but this is my religious belief. Even if that made me furious, at least I could be like, well, I mean, like. They were raised up in a thing. Now we're living in a time wherein, like, why did this happen? This happened, like, with people who for whom the mask has slipped off completely, and they're just like, I love making people who are different from me hurt and suffer. It makes me glad and laugh in my belly. Like, it's messed up. Like, they did it to hurt people, like, to act like that's why that happened, and that it's really hard to get beyond that part, right? Because it's like, okay, so that happened, but then also – what else? How else do we have? What other conversation do we have about this? Like, should James Gunn have deleted those tweets? I don't know the answer to that question.
Right.
Jordan and Caitlin talked about this on the Fandom Files, wherein they were trying to diagnose, like, did this happen? Did Disney do this more because of the fact that James Gunn is very political on Twitter all the time? Did that make them angry? Did that make them more likely? And I don't know the answer to that question. I just know that
there could be somebody on the board that's related to somebody who, like,
there's
it could be
a
completely
million,
different,
there's
you
a
know.
Million things. Just like, you know, like, and, you know, not to dally on a topic that we sort of were like, should we talk about it? But, like, you know, when Hardwick was exonerated, some people were like, yeah, because his wife comes from a $1 billion family that has some controlling interests. So, like, how much? I don't know the answer to that question. All I do know is that we as a civilization don't know how to function with social media.
Yeah,
we don't know how to use it.
You've made that point before, and I think that is like we're just seeing over and over again how true that is.
It's going to take at least two more generations before we really have a grasp on it, to be honest.
Well, in two more generations, it'll be Black Mirror. But anyway.
I hope not. It could be. But like assuming that we're still alive and okay.
And I'm just going to like say the same thing I said before. All of these arguments, unfortunately... it's women and people of color who are the victims. And it's the very strange thing about it. It's like, even though everybody's arguing for us, like technically we're not being affected. It's all like his job. None of the people that are having these arguments and go, even the reinstatement, on both counts, are, It's like the people who come forward to talk about how the real victims don't count. It's just the voices of the people who are trying to basically sway things politically. And I think for me, I've just had an emotional week anyway, because it's sort of like one, you know, lack of sleep coming back from, you know, Comic-Con, and then just the whole even though I'm coming back from Comic-Con, we still live in a world where, like, a little black girl can get her throat slashed in the subway.
Yeah.
So I have this weird... I think that's the other reason why I really like Teen Titans Go to the Movies, because I needed to escape for, like, 2 hours where I was like, I don't need reality. I need bright, colorful, animated characters with musical numbers. That's what I need right now.
Yeah.
Because and a lot of people say they don't want their fandom to become political, but everything is political.
Well, and
it's just about how much of it are you going to intake. Like, sometimes you just gotta put the phone down and put it away.
And that's the thing. I think that, like, whether you think James Gunn should have been fired or not. And there's certainly a debate to be had, yep, whether I agree with you, whatever. Like, there are points of view on that that are debatable. I think, to Danny's point, like, if anything, the situation with Roseanne recently, you know, we really need, I would advise anybody to re-examine their relationship to social media,
because it's
very easy to sit down, toss off 200 and whatever characters and click send and not even think about it. And people have gotten into that, I think, as a mode of operation, not thinking about what they're saying before they say it. Is this something that you want to be judged on by the larger world?
Yeah.
For pretty much the rest of your life.
And not even just for yourself. I mean, this is the other thing, right? Like, we're talking about what happened to James Gunn, but it's like, again, like, Anna Diop, who was playing Starfire, had to leave.
Jope.
Had to leave.
Jope.
What?
I'm doing one of yours, Jope.
Oh. Rhea, is that her?
That's how you say her name.
Oh, okay. Damn. Thank you.
There you go.
So.
I got one.
Nailed it. So she had to leave social media. Where was, do you know what I mean? Like, what takes 5 seconds to just not. We could have just not. Like, right. Why did people have to, you know, like, right. You could have just not said something. Like, for those people that chased her off, there's probably never going to be any consequence to them. Right. But, like, I honestly believe most of them that made those comments, how many of them really thought, they probably, like, were like, I'm nobody. It doesn't, like, how much power does it really have? Like, I think it's thoughtless. But the reality is, cumulatively, and maybe even if it was just you on the wrong day, social media is powerful, and that's the thing. That's the utter truth, is like, it's not just what it does to you. It's what it does to every stranger that you tweet at, every person that can read your feed in general. Like, you can really impact people in a way that you don't expect.
And Instagram is very powerful. Well, and it's also, unlike Facebook and Twitter at this point, you do not need to follow a person to DM them.
Right.
Yeah.
So she wasn't just getting comments on her page. She was getting constant, like, messages. But that were really, really horrible.
I do think that people think more about how they affect other people than how it's affecting themselves.
Yes,
honestly,
absolutely.
I think that's part of the reason a lot of these people who do drive your Kelly Marie Trans off of Instagram or whatever, they are attempting to do it, and they realize
the power. If it was turned on them, they wouldn't be able to
handle it. They realize
the
power of social media, but that's I think that there's a, you know, a cautionary tale here that everything that is a weapon can be turned on you.
Yep.
And I think that, again, we just all have to, and if it encourages people, any of this encourages people to take a little time to think before they speak online, then maybe at the end of the day, it's a better thing. If that actually pushes for that change. I don't know if James Gunn being fired is the one thing that's going to make that happen, but because I think we could all, in any situation, that would be a better world. If people would think about what they were saying and the consequences of it before they put it out there, both to themselves and to others. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, people have been pointing out over and over, you know, Walt Disney said some pretty intense things that, you know, that we, that.
So did Will Eisner.
There's a lot of people that have said some. John Lasseter is on a nice little suspension right now.
He's pretty much toast completely now.
Let me
ask you a question just to sort of, like, I want to put a pin in this topic, and I want to bring it back to James Gunn specifically, because this is like, man, this is our job, I guess, is to talk about nerdy things. Do we think that when all is said and done, when everybody makes their statements and the petition goes its way, is there any chance that you see Marvel reversing their decision and reinstating him as the writer-director of Guardians 3?
I actually think it may happen because of the other people that have been reinstated for other things, like other people that we're not going to mention on this show right now. But there are people that have done so far worse that have been reinstated for things that it's possible. Now, the only thing that might, and also from a production standpoint, that if it looks like however far they are in shooting is going to impact, like, the story, and there's more money or whatever that they'd have to spend to fix whatever he started or get a new director, that might be something else that brings it back. Because money is really what motivates all of
us. Yes. Yeah, I was going to say.
I don't think they will.
You don't think they will?
There's a thing in sports where they talk about refereeing, and they say, you know, this is less of a thing now with instant replay, but if you're a referee and you get a call wrong and you know you got it wrong, you cannot reverse it, because that entirely undermines
the whole game.
Everybody's, you know,
viewpoint of your, everybody thinks they can make this happen. So I think that while they may regret it and they may not take this action if something similar were to arise in the future, I don't think in this particular instance they will reverse the decision.
That's
then
my,
I,
want, that's
then
my
I wonder who's going to direct it. I'm curious.
I don't know. Yes, I don't.
Sean Gunn.
Gosh, I don't know what's going to happen. I think if I'm being completely honest, I think, Adam, you're probably right. But I genuinely don't know. I feel like we're constantly in new territory. So yeah. I have no idea what will happen. But anyway, I feel like we've talked about that a lot. And I want to be able to kind of put a pin in it. So as always, if you're listening, thank you very much for listening. If you're not subscribed to Who Won the Week, you know, give it a shot. Give us a review. And check out all of the other wonderful sci-fi podcasts, Phantom Files, and the Colony podcast. I just saw a new episode from it up, so maybe there was still a little more to go. And there's
yeah, she's going to keep it going to the very
Winona,
end.
There's
yeah.
the Winona Earp podcast that just started with Katie Wilson,
yep.
And then the Amazon podcasts that we have. So please give those a shot, see what you think. And thank you too for always joining me. And yeah. where can folks find you? Online.
You can find me, Karima, the Blur Girl, TheBlurGurl, all over social media. I'm the Blur Girl everywhere, but you guys know I get mail on Twitter.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at RockTheFaces.
And very quickly before we sign off, we talked about like the value of people who are who they seem to be. While we were at San Diego Comic-Con, there was somebody who was a really great person. You were worked for a Collider, who also worked in a number of different series in his right. life, Space Coast to Coast, Upright Citizens Brigade, Metalocalypse, Venture Brothers. His name is John Schnepp, and he died over the weekend. And I assume that if you listen to our podcast, there's a very good chance that you listen to some of the stuff that John did. And I watched a lot of people giving tributes, and Amy Dallin said, John Schnepp was the man you thought he was, and he was one of the most caring, kind, and passionate people. He like just an enormous positive energy in our community, and I wanted to say that if you are feeling down about that, that we are here for you, and I hope that every single one of us in the community thinks about the legacy that John has left behind, and that we'll try to do a little better to live up to that.
Amen.
My name is Danny Roth. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Danny Ordinary. That is Danny with one N, Ordinary, also with one N. This has been Who Won the Week. Thank you for winning our week, and we'll see you again.